And one of those voices that has been with us along this journey from jump, the impeachment journey, is Marjorie Cohen, a professor emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, San Diego, former president of the National Lawyers Guild, author of Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues. Her articles can be found at MarjorieCohen.com. Good morning, Marjorie.
Good morning.
Good morning, Kat. Good morning, Mitch.
Thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
So your initial reactions to the last, I want to say, hour and a half.
Well, of course, it's very polarized the way the debates have been, but a couple of things are interesting. The Republicans are saying, well, abuse of power is not a crime, and you need to have a crime in order to impeach the president. And Nadler, Jerry Nadler, who is the chair of the Senate, of the House Judiciary Committee, defined abuse of power as the use of official power to obtain an improper personal benefit while ignoring or injuring the national interest. And then he said that that fit exactly what Trump has done. Interestingly, the Senate Judiciary Committee issued a 658-page report to the House of Representatives to prepare for this hearing, and they had a section on bribery. Now, bribery, which is specifically enumerated in the Constitution as an impeachable offense, was not included in the two articles of impeachment that the House Judiciary Committee reported. The House Judiciary Committee reported to the House of Representatives because they could not get agreement on it, I suspect. But this report from the Judiciary Committee defines impeachable bribery as the president. It happens when the president offers, solicits, or accepts something of personal value to influence his own official actions. So it will be very interesting to see if there is any attempt to, by the full House, to amend the two articles of impeachment that the Judiciary Committee has reported to them to include bribery. It is there.
Marjorie Cohen, stay with us for a second. Hold that thought. These speeches are short, and somebody we think of great importance is Sheila Jackson Lee, who's just took to the House floor. I want to hear what she has to say. It'll probably be a minute, and we'll be back right to you. This is Democrat Sheila Jackson Lee of Texas.
The American people should receive clarity and truth. The Constitution is the highest law of the land. The president breached and violated the Constitution of the United States of America. The president committed constitutional crimes. The president's crimes are impeachable. John F. Kennedy said, if this country should ever reach the point where any man or group of men by force or threat of force could defy the commands of our court and constitution, then no law would stand free from doubt and no citizen would be safe from his neighbors. The facts are undisputed. First, President Trump violated his oath of office by placing his personal political interests above the national interest by scheming to coerce Ukraine into investigating a potential election opponent. Second, President Trump betrayed the nation by interest by withholding the congressionally agreed $391 million to a fragile ally against a very strong foe, Russia. Third, the essential purpose of the scheme concocted by the president was to enlist a foreign country to help in the 2020 election. These acts are constitutional crimes and abuse of power. The truth is, the president did ask for a favor. Those were his own words. In the July 25th call, no mention of corruption, only the mention of the Bidens. The president was engaged in wrongdoing and is a clear and present danger. He has a pattern, and his behavior remains a continuing threat to America's national security. The truth is that abuse of power does violate the Constitution while both corrupting and cheating our American democracy. His acts betrayed the nation. He must take care to execute laws faithfully. This is the truth. Why does the truth matter? Because it matters to the farmer at his or her plow. It matters to the waitress on an early morning shift. It matters to the steel worker building America. It matters to the teacher in a fifth grade class. It matters to a mother kissing off her military recruit going off to war. The Constitution must be preserved. Our laws must be honored and respected. The bloodshed and sacrifice of fellow Americans cannot be ignored, trampled on, or rejected. And today our actions on the vote taken today must be for no. personal gain or grandeur. The bright light of this constitutional democracy has been dimmed because of his acts. The truth is no longer for all. It is for one man, Donald J. Trump. His truth, his way. We must reject that abuse of power because this is not America. No one is above the law. Alexander Hamilton said impeachment was designed to deal with the misconduct of public men and violation of public trust. The president
has
violated the trust. We must impeach Donald J. Trump.
And that's Democratic Representative Sheila Jackson Lee of Houston, a prominent member of the House Judiciary Committee, longtime representative in Washington, D.C., and also a former judge herself. This is KPFA's live coverage of the full House debate of the concerning impeachment of President Donald Trump. And we are going to pull out occasionally in order to give analysis, because one thing we're not expecting are like the breaks that we would usually get in a congressional hearing that would allow us to bring analysis and perspectives. And so we're going to pull out here and there as we are now to get analysis. And still joining us on the telephone is Marjorie Cohn, Professor Emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law in San Diego, California. Marjorie Cohn, I apologize. I know I cut you off there. Sheila Jackson Lee, someone that we think of highly around here. We wanted to make sure we got her statement on this historic day, in which it'll be only the third time that the House of Representatives will impeach a sitting president. When we left off with you, you were talking about the House Judiciary Report and issues around whether or not what we're talking about here on the floor is if Donald Trump committed a crime.
Yes, and so it is well established by the debates at the Constitutional Convention, by the historic documents, and by the practice of impeachment that when the founders used high crimes and misdemeanors, they were not referring to crimes as defined by the criminal code. Alexander Hamilton said that impeachment is a political process, and abuse of power was alleged against both Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton. So this is not the first time. But to go back to Sheila Jackson Lee, we're going to see she is an example of her remarks of great oratory that we're going to see today on this historic day. And she talked about Donald Trump being a clear and present danger to our election. And that's a theme that the Democrats have echoed. Veronica Escobar, a Democrat from Texas, mentioned a clear and present danger, that Donald Trump's a clear and present danger to the election. Hank Johnson, a Democrat from Georgia, said that the attempt to sabotage the 2020 election is a clear and present danger. And Johnson invoked those who marched and struggled and even died for the right to vote after he talked about Donald Trump being a clear and present danger to the elections. Now, the Republicans, on the other hand, are not dealing with the merits, are not dealing with the facts, are raising issues of process instead of substance. Sensenbrenner said the Democrats have been hijacked by the radical left, and of course this is and socialism. This is what they like to throw out to avoid dealing with the merits. They have argued that Trump was denied the right to present a defense when he actually had the offer to participate in the committee hearings and declined. They distorted the facts. They falsely asserted that Ukraine didn't know that Trump was withholding the military aid. They said Ukraine got the aid and the head of state meeting without publicly announcing the launch of Trump's desired investigations. But in fact, Trump released the aid only after he got caught, and the head of state meeting between the Ukrainian president and Trump has still not occurred. They declared the court should decide whether Trump can immunize subpoenaed witnesses, because for the first time in the history of impeachment in this country, a president who is under investigation for impeachment has blanketly refused to allow any witnesses or documents to be part of the proceeding of the inquiry. And in fact, 17 witnesses did testify anyway in defiance of Trump, but many important critical witnesses like John Bolton, Mick Mulvaney, who have very damning testimony against Trump, have not been allowed to testify. And so the Republicans are saying, well, let's just let the courts figure it out. Let's let the courts decide whether Trump's novel claim of absolute immunity, that all his witnesses have absolute immunity from criminal and civil prosecution, is the can be sustained. Now, absolute immunity doesn't appear in any constitution, statute, or judicial case. It's a figment, it's a creation of the Office of Legal Counsel of the Department of Justice, and it is, the issue is working its way through the courts, but it will be months, even years, before that happens, and that
but
will
do you
be
think, do you
after,
think Democrats should have done that?
The election.
Marjorie, should Democrats should have tried harder rather than keep into a timeline of getting these people to testify by going to the courts and trying to force the testimony from Mick Mulvaney and John Bolton, Charles Kupperman,
well, the Democrats
people.
Did go to court to compel Don McGahn to testify in the Mueller investigation, and it's only now that the courts are saying, yes, he has to testify, and that's being appealed. That was months and months ago. And Kupperman, who was John Bolton's right-hand man, was subpoenaed for this impeachment inquiry. He filed a lawsuit against the House Judiciary Committee and some of the top Democrats, saying, well, let's let the courts decide. This is a conflict between the legislative and executive branches. And the interesting thing is that the House Intelligence Committee then withdrew the subpoena for Kupperman, which made the case moot.
Yeah.
For some reason, it's still bubbling through the courts. So, no, I think the courts move very, very slowly.
You don't think the courts would have expedited this, though, because it is impeachment and the sensitivity of the timing? I mean, the courts couldn't they, if it chose to?
They could if they chose to. And one thing the Democrats could have done is to actually hold these witnesses in contempt who did not respond, who defied the subpoenas and didn't show up. And then that would go to court. So, yes, they could have done that. They elected not to do it. I think that one of the things motivating the Democrats is that many of them are running for election in the Democratic primary, and they want to get this over with. On the other hand, they have momentum, and that speaks for something. I mean, people not everybody. I mean, you and I and some others watch every minute of these hearings. But for most people, they're repetitious. They can be kind of boring. And to get those oratorial nuggets out of this testimony, you really have to watch it all. So the country is split on impeachment. Although I think there's a slight majority that favors impeachment. But again, that could change. I don't know how this will affect the election, if at all. I think people are pretty dug in, but if people really do pay attention to the facts, this is a quintessential example of what the founders had in mind when they wrote impeachment into the Constitution. And by the way, the word impeachment appears 6 times in the Constitution. It was very, very significant to the founders that they create a republic without a king, but with a president who can be checked and balanced by the legislature.
What concerns me, just going back to this issue of going to the courts to force the testimony of people like Mick Mulvaney, John Bolton, Charles Kupperman, and others, is it's pretty remarkable. I mean, these are government officials, and it's pretty remarkable to deny Congress to be able to hear from government officials on an issue that seems to be of quite importance. And not going to the courts and not forcing the issue and not forcing them to testify will set the precedent for future presidents to do the same kind of stonewalling, which, you know, maybe they'll, you know, future occasions will have to go to the courts. But it just seemed to me this is something they could have dealt with now.
Well, in terms of setting a precedent, these issues are in the courts right now. So they are eventually going to be resolved one way or the other. Maybe the courts will say it's moot. I don't know. But on the other hand, it would take a lot of time. I mean, it's really kind of a judgment call. The Constitution says in Article 1 very, very clearly that the House of Representatives shall have the sole power of impeachment. Not the courts, not the executive, but the House of Representatives, the Congress. And that's what they're doing. They're exercising that constitutional power. So I can see arguments on both sides. I'm not sure that this is a mistake, not stretching it out and waiting to go to the courts, although, as I said, they could have held these people in contempt. But not by not holding them in contempt, they actually got 17 witnesses to testify for them. 17 nonpartisan administrative witnesses came forward in the closed-door depositions, and 12 witnesses testified in public hearings. This is in spite of Trump's orders that they not testify, and it's possible that the leaders of the House committees who were making these decisions decided, well, if we hold them in contempt, we don't have any prayer of getting them to come voluntarily. I don't know if that figured into their calculation, but it might have.
I mean, the only other thing that I would say about that, and then we can move on, is that as we talk about the fact that the polling numbers around who opposes and supports impeachment have hovered right at 50% and there hasn't been significant movement one way or the other. And the only thing that will likely move those numbers is additional new information if it is scandalous, salacious enough. And the people that are closest to the president are those that would hold that information, like Mick Mulvaney or Bolton. And so I almost feel like without their testimony, we sit right here, and that it might have been smarter for the Democrats to force the issue. And if it takes longer, so be it, to get that level of information out of the people closest to the president who know the most about what was happening.
Yes, I mean, this issue is going to come up again in the Senate trial, and this is going to be very, very interesting. It's a foregone conclusion that the House of Representatives is going to impeach Donald Trump today. There's no doubt about that. It's historic, and it's extremely significant. Then the proceeding moves to the Senate. Now, the senators who sit as jurors in that trial take an oath to be impartial, and yet Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, has said, I don't pretend to be impartial. This is political proceeding. And Lindsey Graham said, I've already made up my mind. And Mitch McConnell said, he said this several times, we're coordinating with the White House on the whole Senate trial. Now, I'm a longtime criminal defense attorney, and I have never seen a jury come to the defendant and say, well, how do you want the trial to go, and coordinate with the defendant? And also, McConnell has said, well, this is going to be an acquittal. I've also never seen a jury come to the defendant before the trial and say, you're going to be acquitted. That would be great for my clients, but it doesn't happen. It's like Alice in Wonderland. Adam Schiff or Nadler who is asking for the Senate to call as witnesses Mick Mulvaney and John Bolton and two other top officials.
Yeah, that was Chuck Schumer.
And McConnell. Schumer. Okay, Schumer has said that. That's right. And the Democrats in the House are going to be the managers or the prosecutors in the Senate trial, but they apparently don't have the power to decide what witnesses to call. That's up to the Senate. And the Senate is the body that decides the rules of the trial. So Schumer asked McConnell for these witnesses to be allowed to testify, and McConnell said, no, absolutely not. So if it becomes clear that this is a sham trial, that it's being rushed through, that the Democrats are not able to call witnesses, that may affect some people who are watching the proceedings. On the other hand, Republicans have complained that they were not allowed to call witnesses during the House proceedings in the House committees, although I don't think that's quite true. So, again, people
but not,
are...
not the witnesses they really
know.
Wanted, Marjorie. They weren't able to call the witnesses they really wanted.
Right, which are Adam Schiff and the whistleblower. Those are the two. And
Hunter. Don't forget Hunter.
Right. And so this is consistent with the Republican strategy to not take the facts head on and dispute them, because they are indisputable, but rather to distract and divert and change the subject. And calling for the whistleblower to testify is totally irrelevant. First of all, it violates the Whistleblower Protection Act. Secondly, everything in that whistleblower's report has been corroborated 10 times by the transcript of the July 25th phone call between Trump and Zelensky, and by many, many administration witnesses. To call Adam Schiff, because he was the head of the Intelligence Committee, which did the investigation and then turned it over to the Judiciary Committee, is also distraction and changing the subject. And calling Hunter Biden is kind of a trial within a trial. It's irrelevant. It's a side issue. And judges in criminal proceedings don't allow that, because it's a waste of time and it distracts the jury from the real issues. They will continue to try to get these people to testify in the Senate trial. I don't think they'll be able to get the whistleblower's testimony because of the Whistleblower Protection Act. I don't know that Schiff will respond positively to a subpoena. I don't know what Hunter Biden will do, but it certainly is a tactic to change the subject away from the guilt of Donald Trump, which has been conclusively established by the evidence amassed in the Senate, in the House committees.
Well, Schiff may even be a floor manager. They're going to decide after the vote on the two articles of impeachment who will be the floor managers. And when we say floor managers, they're going to be Democratic lawmakers who will basically act as the prosecutors in the trial of Donald Trump in the Senate. So, it's very possible Schiff could be a floor manager in that process, which would be interesting. Marjorie Cohn, we're almost out of time, but I do think it's important to note Mitch McConnell may not have full say, while Republicans could have full say of how the rules go in the trial. All you need are four Senate Republicans to agree with Democrats to call some of the witnesses that Chuck Schumer has laid out. And it's not a far-gone conclusion that they wouldn't side with him, I guess, at this point. If you think of people like Susan Collins, Mitt Romney, Lisa Murkowski, maybe Lamar Alexander, a Republican who's retiring.
Yes, that's true, because that only requires of 51 votes, not two-thirds. These procedural issues, these issues of rules, so that's true. Some of them may break with the party line on these witnesses, and we may actually see testimony from these witnesses. It remains to be seen. I mean, certainly Susan Collins, in voting for Justice Kavanaugh, made an awful lot of enemies. There are a lot of people who are trying to unseat her. Murkowski is another one who is on the fence. And I think you're right. I think there's a good chance of that. I was thinking it would be a great idea if enough Republicans would go along with it in the Senate. You say four. I thought it was three, but it's probably four.
It's 51-47. So to get to that 51, you need four more.
You need four more. Okay. So I was thinking that they could have a procedural vote, and if they could get four Republicans to go along with voting for a secret ballot, they can do that. There's no precedent for it, but they can certainly do it. There's nothing saying they can't.
For the rules. A secret ballot for the rules.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No. I'm saying a secret ballot for the actual decision on guilt of Donald Trump at the Senate trial. And if four Republicans went along with that, you would see a very different vote, because these Republicans, I think many of them, are going along with Trump because they're terrified of being defeated. They're terrified of incurring his wrath. Mm-hmm. There's got to be some Republicans of conscience who see what he has done and how the proof of his guilt is so glaring. And not only that, he's still doing it. I mean, openly and notoriously still appealing to Ukraine for interfering in our elections. He asked China in publicly if China would also get dirt on the Bidens.
Do you take that seriously, though? I mean, I hear lawmakers continually bringing up that concerning China and other things that he said, that I wonder if we should take those statements so seriously, because I kind of interpreted him as just, playing around in a way in the public arena.
I think we should, and I think that when we combine those statements with the fact that Rudy Giuliani just got off a plane, engaged in the same business in Ukraine, he's not there because he feels like it. Right? Clearly, he's still enacting Donald Trump's wishes. So I think
that's right.
And I don't think that Donald Trump has any issue with telling you exactly what he's going to do, because he's very clear he's about to get away with it.
That's right. He's always gotten away with everything.
Right.
And Zelensky is still trying to get that head of state meeting, even though he says he wasn't pressured. If you look at the evidence, of course, he's felt pressured, and he's still feeling pressured to mount these investigations, and he may still do it. So by continuing to appeal to Ukraine to announce the investigations, Trump doesn't care if they actually conduct the investigations. He wants the announcement. Trump is trying to affect the election, and Trump learned from Comey's announcement about Hillary's emails 11 days before the election how just an announcement, a public announcement, just kind of tarnishing the opposition is so effective, and I think he's taking a page from that playbook. We're going to see Trump continuing to shamelessly solicit other countries to interfere with the elections. He really thinks he's going to get away with it. I mean, that six-page letter that he wrote to Pelosi was defiant. He thinks that he is saying that the Democrats are the ones that are engaging in abuse of power and obstruction of justice.
He accused them of a coup.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
I mean, I thought all was missing in that six-page letter was a declaration of arrest and suspension of Congress.
That's a good point. And also questioning Nancy Pelosi's statement that she was praying for him. I mean, nothing is sacred with Donald Trump. Nothing. It's really, even when you think nothing could be more incredible than he tweets and he writes letters and he makes statements, just shame. I've never seen anything quite like it.
Marjorie Cohns, Professor Emerita at Thomas Jefferson School of Law, San Diego, former President, National Lawyers Guild, author of Drones and Targeted Killing, Legal, Moral, and Geopolitical Issues. You can find her writings where she writes frequently. I'm on her email list, marjoriecohn.com. Marjorie Cohn, we thank you.
Thank you both. I appreciate it.